in the height of the season, Sonny's not gonna put guys on the seven to go run down the beach, and I don't think we really want him to do that.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah, no, Sonny's not, right? I think manage the program separately. If we want to start enforcing a $50 ordinance, I tend to agree with John that that's not the message you want to send, because you're punishing the dumb. Now, unfortunately, the dumb come here. You know, they go in the house and go,
what are you just
saying?
Whatever. They rent a house, there's flyers in the houses that say stuff. It's on our website. The lifeguards go around telling people. So there's plenty of communication opportunities for someone to know the rule, right? Not only that, multiple beaches, including Fury Beach, have been in the news multiple times about tents left on the beach. And nowhere else in North Carolina can you leave personal property overnight on public property without someone getting upset about it. So the people that are doing it are not thinking. So we should help them. Whether we charge them $50 or not, if we're going to do that, we need to put a process in that has someone other than one of the firemen giving someone a ticket when they're trying to get their stuff. Because I don't think that's the right thing to do, right? I mean, Ed's going to talk later about the challenges of staff in the fire department, I think, where the chief is, and volunteer firemen are not the right people to be issuing a $50 citation to someone out in front of the fire department. Because that's just going to go bad in a lot of different ways. So, I mean, from my standpoint, staff to meet your need, that is just one of those things, and I think the council will support your budget to do that. If you want to make a special job for some 16-year-old to drive a gator and pick up tents, I'm sure you could find one that would love to do that. He'd go every night for 2 hours. I got one that lives in my house.
And then he can roll the garbage cart back.
I'll be glad to send you.
I can give you the extra money.
But I'm thinking you can find someone that maybe not a lifeguard, but okay, here's his part-time job. He can sleep in all day and surf, and then at the end of the day, you drive a gator up and down and pick up tents.
Yeah, you don't want to compromise the safety of somebody to pick up a tent. That's just.
But you could get a minimum wage guy.
That's right.
That'd be a perfect job. I mean, I know there's a bunch of them that stay in my house that would be glad to do that every day.
Right. And when you made that comment about people come down a minute in the nicest way, I understand that too.
We have some really smart people coming down here too.
Well, they're on vacation and
they don't leave their tents on the beach every night.
And I think to our suggestion back here, I think there's some concern about putting volunteers in a situation.
Right.
Even just handing out a brochure can turn ugly sometimes if people don't want to receive that information. So I don't know that that's the best.
Well, when the summer comes, we'll be anxious to hear back from you and how it's working.
How's the whole summer beach?
Okay. John, would you like to tell us, are you having any problems with the tourist increase?
No, the main things that I see, the issues that I see facing the town are just the increase in weekly rentals. It's not just our ocean front anymore. That's not our second row anymore. It's moving back into our residential areas. We have people that are buying older properties and some newer properties and building brand new properties for the sole purpose of renting out for those 12, 15, 18 weeks out of the year, whatever it is. And then using it for their personal use and extended family for the rest of the year. It's an investment for them with sometimes a pretty decent return. Along with that comes the issues of parking and trash collection and things of that nature. The other significant problem that I see coming is that soon Fury Beach is going to be built out as far as our vacant lots. I'm already seeing increases in properties that are being sold and bought for the sole purpose of tearing down the old structure and building a new one. Along with that comes significant decrease in the permitting fees that I've taken. If you'll notice over the last couple of years, I think building permit fees come in between $150,000 and $200,000. That's not just permitting fees, that's stormwater fees, water and sewer tax, all of those things. So I'll give you an example. If you were to buy a piece of property in any given location in town and build a brand new house, this property's never had a structure on it, your building permit is going to be between $8,000 and $12,000. That's dependent on where the property is located. There's different fees associated with different areas. On the other hand, you buy a piece of property that's got an older house on it or a smaller house or whatever the case may be. The way our permit fees are set up, you are not charged for stormwater, you're not charged for water and sewer, you're charged a base permit fee, and it's probably going to be anywhere from $1,200 to $2,000. And you're building a brand new house, it's probably going to be about three times the size of what was there, with three times the amount of bedrooms, three times the amount of bathrooms, and so on. So, the reason I bring that up is twofold. We're going to be losing that revenue sooner or later. And we will be having an impact, negative impact on our infrastructure and also parking and things of that nature. So I feel like those fees and concerns should be addressed and looked at in the coming years. I think we need to figure out something within the next 3 to 5 years.
I think we should look at them this year. I think that we should come up with a user's fee that is based on not on just a set user's fee of $2,500. I think we should base it on bedrooms, bathrooms, what kind of,
I'm with you.
You know, that's what John's saying. And I think we need to come up with something, even if it's, the first shot at it, something that we don't, you know, we can always change further down the road. But
I think the time is here for that. Yeah, it's definitely here.
Can you and Arlen prepare something for us to show what that would look like and what those fees should be?
Well, it'd basically just be a percentage fee. You know, you're looking at a certain percentage for bathroom that you're adding or bathroom that you brought. You're looking at a percentage on the square footage of your property or the new structure. And I think it should go across the board as far as your user fee, stormwater fee, and so on.
So this is
right
now, for new construction or for everybody?
I think it should, there's two different issues there. You've got new construction, and you've got people that are adding on, adding that one bedroom and bathroom.
Right. Yeah.
To make the property more valuable for the winter season. There's two different ways to look at that. That should be looked at.
Well, there's some fees that you're not going to be able to increase just because they're tearing down one and putting another. Unless they need a larger service or whatever, as far as water and sewer, right? But if they're going to use more water, they're going to use more sewer, based on a larger thing, then that, maybe that is something we need to look at.
I mean, if you have more roof space, you're also going to drive more drainage
issues. What they're doing is they're generating a hardship on the town when they start building these. These small motels is basically what they're doing. And it's like John said, it's more garbage. There's more, there's less parking. They're taking on the parking, the trash and the garbage, more water store usage, and stuff like that. So, you definitely need to.
Yeah, I think you can. Recommendations.
As far as parking goes, probably share some way we can have two separate different sets of rules. You've got a rule for required parking on your property if you live there full time, there's another rule if you're renting it out. But I don't know how we would ever accomplish that or enforce that, because that's the daily struggle I have making sure people have the required amount of parking per our ordinances for their property, because I know exactly what they're doing.
Right.
Nobody's trying to hide it, but I want to have this bedroom.
And that's another thing that needs to be, the parking needs to be based on bedrooms or whatever. I mean, if they're going to put 18 bedrooms in a house, But you need, you have to take into consideration they're going to be using or renting a place out to use it. So
yeah.
You should base your parking on that type
the number of bedrooms. Well, the number of bedrooms isn't always indicative of the number of people.
Right.
True, right?
Well, okay.
What I'm saying is, you know, they tell you it's a 5-bedroom house, but when you walk in, there's actually beds in 7 rooms.
Right.
Right. Right?
Yeah.
Because there's no closet in that room, it's not a bedroom.
Right.
Well, I think Sonny's point is good, is you can at least work towards that. You might, only perfect is never going to be perfect, but I think, you know, if the fee structure sounds like the building inspector bringing up a good point, the council sounds like we're supportive of you changing it this year. The budget is the perfect time of year to do that. If you need our help, tell us what you need, but you and Arlen and Sonny are probably the right 3 people to look at that, you know, from y'all's expertise on what it should change, where I think council would. It sounds like it's pretty supportive of that now. I don't think you have to worry about it. If you bring it into the budget process, when we do the tax, you know, we set the tax fee, we also set our any other fees, and we'll just fix it. I mean, it might take a little while to work it out, but yeah, if you want to work on it, go for it. Just, we're with you, right?
Yes.
I think it's easy to explain to the citizens why, and it's the right thing to do.
Do we need to look at our commercial water sewer and how, what determines it's commercial? I don't remember what the parameters are, but if it's a 5-bedroom.
That brings up a really good issue. These houses that are going up, and I met a couple recently that their entire family from several states can't wait to get here this summer because they're staying at the Sea Monster, which has nine bedrooms, and each will sleep 4 to 6 people. Is that a business or is that a residence?
Well, I think you should. Yeah, I think if you pay Ramachi tax, you should be on a commercial roof. I don't know if we do it that way, but that's the way we link them. And we got to find all those people that are doing that.
I suppose it's a good question. Is trying to identify that, I guess, using the police department. Is there a county mechanism that identifies these VRBOs or anything like that? Or is
county.
Well, county doesn't give us a list of who's paying it right now. We're trying to fight with them about that issue so we can check them against what we see.
Yeah,
because they don't know their process is broke right now, too.
Very broke.
But let me put a kind of monkey wrench in this thing here, because I heard this at a meeting where the historic preservation people in Wilmington are fighting this. And if they're paying a commercial rate and therefore it's considered a business, Sea Watch, for example, do our ordinances allow businesses in neighborhoods like Sea Watch?
Sea Watch specifically, I don't believe there is anything.
I mean, like Sea Watch.
SCR, one thing, when you can't stop rentals.
I think
the council tried to touch that because people wanted to, and we were yes sued.
Well, but are rentals considered business?
Other homes.
Yeah, except for rentals. Rentals different.
Does it say in our ordinance except for rentals?
Don't recall anything our ordinances that says anything like that.
Okay. And that's what one of the things Wilmington is toying with right now, whether or not buying a property, an investment property, that you have, well, I don't know that you can prove you have no intentions of living there, but if that's a business and that neighborhood doesn't allow businesses to be operated, then there's some question.
Well, it's a short term. You're talking about short term rental.
Short term.
Anybody can own a home and rent it.
No, short term rentals.
Yeah.
Even short term rentals, I know, I'm not aware that there's anything that prohibits short term rentals unless it's part of an HOA.
Yeah, it has to be on the covenants or insured lines of your property. The legislature is, I'm pretty sure I'll let Andy back me up on this, but when the council looked at the RA1A issue, the council realized that the state legislature, you can rent your property, and there's no, oh, well, we don't like you to rent for a week versus a monthly basis. Rent is rent. But we did make it so you can tax people if it's short-term rental. So they gave you that authority, but they didn't say you can stop people from renting their property. Right? Is that the dumb engineer version of it, but... Yeah.
Could you find a legislation that says basically short-term rentals are not...
That's case law.
Cannot be laid...
Signed by the board.
I think it will continue to do that.
Yeah.
It is fair that the point is making that dumb. If you are using town facilities to generate revenue, you should be paying the commercial rates for water and sewage. Question is, make sure you pay commercial rates all year round. And how do you determine who it is?
I'm not sure if this issue of revenue is now pending before the Supreme Court of the United States. I'm hoping they'll tell you more.
Well, they won't be doing that for a couple of years.
Because getting into this, we've got to that point, and switching between, it's residential, this part of here, commercial, living at that same. I don't think we want to do that.
No, I think you make it one time.
Right. Yeah.
Just because you didn't rent your property out, we don't care.
Right.
If you have so many bedrooms.
No, I think for me, if it's legal, which I don't know, I think you gotta research this, is if you are paying room occupancy tax, you're paying commercial water, sewer, and security fees. I think that's where we go to. We're not there right now, I don't think. So I think the only people that we charge the commercial rate to are people that get a business license, right? I think that's how you
do it. Well, it's not really a business license anymore, but it's the business, pretty much it's the downtown is the commercial.
The only
Right. There might be a few other miscellaneous, but... And motels, yeah.
And
bed and
breakfasts.
Do we have a bed and breakfast?
Right, I want to ask. If they're identified as a motel, then yes, we would charge.
Yeah, they're all common. We had one down south of TM.
But on our application, we ask if it's going to be short-term rental.
Yeah.
Right? And I plan to do some campaigning through the website this summer to remind people that if you are renting your property, that you need to be paying the room occupancy tax.
Oh yeah, I think we're going to send a letter to the property owner in March. That's where I want the council to go, is to put them on notice that, okay, we're going to look, and one, we're going to turn you into the tax assessor if you're not paying it. We're going to come after you. I mean, we said that during the election, so I think... we should do that. Everyone that ran said we were going to work on this issue. So from my perspective, you should put it on the website. But I think councils, in the end, we want to get through this. But in March or April, we're going to, at least what I think we're going to do, is send a letter out to all citizens that you are responsible to pay room occupancy tax if you're renting your property out short term. It's a legal requirement. The town will be working with New Hanover County Tax Office to identify properties that are paying, and then we will look around, and if there are properties we don't think are paying, we're going to turn it into the New Hanover County Tax Office for them to investigate.
And John, do you remember that woman a couple of weeks ago that sent me the email asking about all of that? Mm-hmm. And she asked if there was a fine or a charge. If you did not pay royalty, you deliberately did not pay it because you didn't want to. Is there?
It's out of jail for tax evasion.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's through the county. We don't.
Yeah, that's the county, not your reach. That's why I say our letter will say we will turn you in. So we put people on fair notice. We're looking. If we find you, we're going to tell the tax office that you're not paying your bill, and then you and them can explain to each other why you shouldn't.
But then is there legality if we take that list, if we ever get it from TDA and say, okay, and you're also going to be charged commercial rates?
Well, that's why I need to ask if it's legal or not. I mean, we got to research it, but I think, so that's where you got to find out, is that legal or not? I don't know that it is. And if we have to change our ordinance to support it, I think that's the issue. It's a complicated issue, but I think it's the place we should look. If you're running a business, you should be paying the commercial rates for water and sewer, I think. But if the legislature said you can't charge them, okay, then you can't. But we should investigate that. I think that's the word.
They didn't say you couldn't charge. They said you couldn't couldn't call them a business, right?
Well, we don't know what it is.
The problem is you're running into basic real estate law to cut off the boat at Plymouth Rock. That's what's going up the whole works.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think you can say we know the answer right now, but I think we can direct the building inspector and the attorney to investigate. Can you charge, if a property is paying room occupancy tax, can we then use that as the method to say we will charge them commercial water storage? That's the question. I don't think you know the answer right now. We've got to find out.
Yeah, no, you do it in your brain.
Yeah, well, that's the second part. Because I'm with Arlen. I don't think you want to be swapping back and forth because that's a nightmare for them.
Well, it puts us in the place of investigating whether.
Right. If you're commercial, just because you shut your business down, so the restaurant was shut down for 8 weeks, they still got charged commercial rates. They didn't use any water, so if you're not operating, you're not using any water, so we're not charging. I guess you get charged the minimum.
I guess the basic law is if you want to do a certain charge, if you have a class of people, you might define it as that class.
Right.
You can get away with it.
That's what I think. But I think you need to investigate it off the cuff.
And besides water and sewer, then if you ask me if you're saying it's commercial, then you're also talking about changing the food service food.
That's right. All our fees, if you're a business, you're a business. Whatever other fees are
available. Yeah, we need to be careful about that then.
Okay, well.
Because picking up garbage 5 days a week at these at all these sites is going to be
So we might make a separate
or something.
Well, we make a separate class of charges for commercial residential.
That's the way I
would. Well, that's why ROT is more specific than just revenue generation, right?
Yeah.
Because ROT could be a class of people
that
doesn't get 5 days a week.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. So we might have to change some of the fee structures and add another line item, but you could do that. And I think that's why you gotta actually think about it, not just wing it, right? You gotta, okay, first, can we do it? Lawyer, can we do it? And if we can, then what are the things we need to think about changing, right? So that Manny's not pulling her hair out and Sonny's not pulling his hair out.
What are the implications of doing it? Just like,
what if you create, you wanna create that you know that you're gonna win in court?
Yeah, I heard that. That's why I want to know.
Do you think we know that?
Well, I mean, I think you communicate to people. The citizens will like we're doing this. The investors will not like it, but okay. You're making plenty of money, dude. Mm-hmm. You can explain to your renters I had to raise your rate $1, because it won't be that much more if they're paying commercial water rates. You sort of double, but it's still only going to be $50 a month or something.
And the truth of the matter is, the ROT costs are generally added to the bill. It's not coming out of the investor.
That's right. Exactly right. So
it's not coming out of the investor. I don't know why they avoid it. So unless they charge for the whole, right, or consider part of their
bill. Well, they're just undercut their competition. Or they don't know about it. That's what we've done.
That's why I mean, when you say undercut the competition, that's exactly why I say the realtors ought to be behind this 100% because they're the only, they're following the law and they're getting shafted.
Yeah.
Well,
they don't want the extra bookwork.
Right, that's the other problem, right? Or someone writes that cash table, I
think.
Okay.
It's a pet peeve and it's a big revenue source we need to get on.
What about recreation, Nancy?
That's my favorite topic.
How are you managing all of these tourists coming in this season?
We work a lot with the police department in looking at what we put down there and when we put it, what kind of concerts we have, how long we have. When we first started out, we were having concerts every summer during May, end of May, towards the end of August, we have split that out some. It's every other Sunday. We are not booking anybody that we think will bring in a larger crowd on the holiday weekends. We try to keep a pretty tight control and keep it contained within the park site. Traffic's a big issue down in that area, and traffic backs up. People looking for parking, any special events and so forth that we have. We also always look at the overall impact of what's going to happen down there. I always have a staff member on site. We bring in a temp during the summer months to help with all of the programming that we have down there. I just feel more comfortable knowing there's a staff person on site to kind of keep an eye on things. And if we need to bring in the police, and luckily we haven't had to so far. We also look at the types of bands and who comes to that and try to control that. If we get complaints, then that band doesn't come back. Those are the kinds of things that we look at.
Does it require additional public works help?
Not
what's that?
What's that?
Always involves us somehow.
Well, the trash.
Do you put an extra van on because there's a concert that night?
No, we do clean bathrooms around 3 o'clock before the thing, but that's the number one thing that we do. So it's not a cargo.
Have we moved things from the shoulder?
Yes,
seasons.
we're starting concerts earlier.
Stuff, you know, during the season.
Right, we're spreading it out more, so shoulder season, more for the residents too. We're finding a lot of the concerts, it is predominantly residents that are coming. We get some tourists, but it's not as much. Most people aren't going to come off the beach at 5 or 6 o'clock on a weekend to come to a concert. I've done my survey, the ones that I've attended a whole lot of them. But you tend to see the same people. You agree with that or not, Craig? You were at a lot of the concerts. Also, I've already forgotten the question. What was the question?
What about children's programs during the day? Is that
That's a lot of, I'd say, day trippers. We get a lot of people from Wilmington, even Pender County, bringing the kids down. The kids' program is hugely popular, the Princesses and Storytime. So I would say that's more... maybe not people coming to visit, residents, grandkids, that kind of thing, attend those things. We do the same thing with our special events. We're going to have a street festival again this year. That's in April, so that's not peak season. And then we have the jazz funeral in October. Our concerts are running from May through October every other Sunday, and then other things in between that. But anything we put down there at the park certainly impacts, or anything that we allow in Joe Weeks Park, or even the community center can have an impact. So that's always in the back of our minds. Mickey works very well with the other departments too in coordinating, so I keep the impact down.
Have you found a contractor to paint?
Yes, he started now, Couric Painting. Sherwin-Williams donated the paint. The pavilion had to be redone down there, the undersides of it. They're going to have to strip everything off, sand it off, and repaint. So he's already started last week. He did get Sherwin-Williams to donate the cost of the paint, so that helped us with the overall cost of getting that done. This should be paint geared to weather, hopefully. The
if
elements.
It's not, he said he's going to back it up, yeah. And he'll come back and redo it if necessary. So
it's new products that Sherwin-Williams has, and they want to to put them out and test them. So.
Alright, and we'll replace all the fixtures out there, the fans and the lights and whatever.
The fan blades that are. If you stand right next to
it. Hopefully, with something that's going to last a little longer.
Longer. Yeah.
All right. Last
if I could just, I guess, in my particular view, I mean, as I think about this, and I'm a little bit, not quite 180 degrees, but I might have turned 90 degrees from where I started with this thing. Like I say, all the time, let's do it all the time. During the season, when we have these guys buried with just the normal free stuff, the free movies, the two parks, the ferry, everything going crazy, I think we should do our best to limit in-season concerts. Mm-hmm. Particularly when we have the free ones down at the, which we sponsor, down at the, so that we're not creating more issues, but that maybe, plus there's the heat during that period of time. So I guess my view would be if the more we can push into the shoulder and give these guys a little bit of a break during the season, because there's plenty of draw in parade.
We only have something on Sunday. We have the market on Tuesdays. My staff takes care of the parking, we try to park everybody at the corral and take them down on the golf cart to keep that traffic flowing. And we have the children's programming, turtle talks, which are fairly popular. We seem to get a lot of visitors for the turtle talks. And then the concert on Sunday. We watch what Carolina Beach is doing, which is pretty much something every day. So we try not to conflict with that, which is kind of hard because they've got something going on all the time. And then we don't have concerts when they have them down at Fort Fisher. That was part of the thought process of doing every other Sunday. We have the concert down there on the Fridays. We have nothing Friday or Saturday.
And we have New Year's Eve again this year.
Yes. Right? And then we'll have Special Olympics next year. I think they're going to start alternating.
Can you double check on that? Because I heard something about they were going to have it at Carolina Beach because they still have all the fireworks. They did not set off this New Year's Eve, this past week.
Oh, I don't know. That's fine with me if they want to do.
Be some old fireworks, aren't it?
Right, yeah. I'm thinking they would use them during the summer instead of.
I don't know. But it would be nice for everybody to know now. Do we have to set New Year's Eve aside?
Well, we want some new ones. We don't want to go to
the
fireworks. They could be wet or anything. And our Christmas show, will we have a Christmas show this year?
As far as I know. We really have not had a whole lot to do with the Christmas show. That's kind of a self-running entity. But we did do some advertising, all the advertising and stuff for them this past year.
Okay. Anybody else have any comments on what we're doing with tourists?
I would just say for recycling. With recycling, we had some issues last year when the holiday fell on a Monday, like Memorial Day and I think July 4th. So I've had the recycling vendor offset. If the holiday's on a Monday during the summer, we're not going to have the truck out on Fort Fisher. We had a lot of backups and traffic and stuff, so hopefully that'll help this year.
My last question on recreation, is there are there any marathons or that type of event that we actually have scheduled at this point?
Not as of right now. There's one that they've been doing the last couple of years. I think it starts in Carolina Beach and comes down here. I don't remember what month that was, so I don't think that's during the summer. But we don't have anything. No one's approached us about that right now.
Except for Special Olympics next year.
Yeah, if that's here. We do have, and this isn't really summer, but we have two youth baseball leagues now that are using the baseball field. So Nikki Healy, our recreation manager, is getting more involved in the use of Joe Hicks Park, which we really didn't get too much into. Plus, we had someone start a flag football team last year. He'll be coming back this year. So her main focus has been the pavilion and the programs there, renting that and renting this facility. But now we're seeing that Joey's Park is coming more. And right now we don't charge anything for Joey's Park.
And a couple of tournaments on disc golf.
Yes. We mainly help with the advertising on those.
And you'll let everybody know as early as possible what all those dates are.
For the events?
Yeah. Yeah. So they'll know whether to get more people out there like on the disc golf.
Yeah, I think Nikki keeps you guys in the loop pretty much about when we have scheduling.
Stormwater management plan. That's number 3 under department head presentations.
Are you giving the clicker?
Can I just tell you to get it under control? That way you'll stay away.
Will you be his assistant?
Okay. Well, first of all, what I'd like to do is show you some mapping, as you can see right here, some of the problem spots that we have during some of the major rain events that we've been having. And I'd like to talk about any of the locations that we're going to show on these maps. If y'all want to talk about them a little bit or whatever, I don't want to get into a lot of detail. If you want to get in detail, I'd love for you to come by the town and public works facility. I believe I'll be glad to sit down with even Mr. Dugan and talk about, you know, this in depth. But I'll be glad to answer whatever. We can stay as long as you want to talk about it. I mean, I'm really excited about this.
What's your favorite subject?
I don't know. I don't have all the answers to all the problems that we have. But what I wanted to let council know is I am aware of the problems. I'm aware of the locations. I know them very well. And that we are looking for solutions for these problems. A lot of these problems are in very difficult areas and difficult situations to try to take care of. And almost all of them are in very low areas, lots. Most of these are lots that are very low, that even 24 inches lower than the right-of-way or the road level. So trying to make stormwater go uphill is kind of difficult unless you pump it. But we're trying to figure out ways to help the individual property owners, and what we're going to be trying to do is also ask them to help us out by doing certain things. Maybe filling some of their lots if they want to get rid of water, or pumping, putting a sump pump in or whatever. But the biggest thing is we're going to try to give them some information on how we can go about it and give them the opportunity to be able to take the storm water and put it somewhere. So right now, some of the places doesn't have anywhere to put it.
David explained some of this stuff to me with one statement, actually. And what you're concerned about is making sure that, from a public perspective, we are able to move the water, but the individual property owner needs to be able to get the water to the public system.
That's the whole deal,
right?
Right.
So what we're going to see is what you're going to do with the public system.
What I'm going to show you, the number one, is all the areas that we have under concern.
Okay.
I think what you'll be surprised at is how spotty it is, and it's not as much as you actually think it is. Because nowadays, when people can get on the internet or on a thing, and they can type out and send it all over the place, you just hear about it more. They're not bashful about complaining about a puddle in the backyard, which I don't blame, because I've got one beside me and I'm at it next to a neighbor, but I'm going to have to help myself out a little bit. But anyway, that's where we're at. And I'm going to go through this fairly quickly, just give you some ideas. I'll talk about it as long as you want to, and each one of the properties, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, and just to add what Craig said, right? So there's really a couple of issues, right? So I think we're seeing a lot more rain this past year than we've seen in a while. I know, talking to some old-timers, we've got water places that don't ever miss in it, right? And that's my dad and Sonny that have been here longer than me, right?
The other night on the news, they said New Hanover County had more rain in 2015 than in the history of record keeping.
I agree with that.
So that's one issue. A second issue is, like Sonny said, that people do not, well, he didn't say it clearly. What he did say was that people complain easier, right? So we're hearing about it, which is good. What I see as an issue, and that's why I'm working with Sonny and asked that Joe be allowed to work with us so that there's two councilmen on it, is we have to inform the public that, you know, some of the issue is your responsibility, and you own it, right? Sonny does a great job of helping people. He's taking pumps out. He's done a lot of stuff. We've given him authority to do stuff with public money that, you know, he did the right thing, came and asked us for it. We're helping the citizens out. But we're using public money on private property for a private problem. And so we got to be real cautious about that. Because they give the expectation when Sonny does that he's always going to do it. He's had calls from people, hey, it's supposed to rain tomorrow, so you need the pumps ready. That's not the right way it should be. Because what should happen is we help those people in extremists and then they fix their problem. And so I think the communication piece, we as the council, when people come to us with a problem, we can't just tell them to fix your problem. We'll tell them we will work to understand the problem and we'll help you with solutions. But if it's private property, That's your problem.
Right.
And so, just for counsel, when people come to you, refer them to Sonny or me, and the answer from counsel should be, you know, this is a complicated problem, there's more water than the history of the town, but the town doesn't own every piece of water that comes down. Until you get it off your private property, that's your water, right? And the town has a responsibility to try to work with you if your neighbors are shedding on your property. But if a neighbor sheds on your property, that's really between you and the neighbor as well. The town doesn't own that either. We might get involved because maybe our building inspector should have done something different or someone should have seen it. But if in the history of your land, this empty lot was taking all your water, and then they build on their property, and now it's not taking your water, that's not the town's problem either.
I'm not sure what's happening.
Yeah. I know, and that's what I'm saying. So we have a responsibility to investigate to figure out the problem, help you define the problem. But if it turns out it's a private property problem, we have the responsibility to all the other taxpayers to tell those people that. And I think Sonny's done a great job with his guys of helping people out, but we've built some expectations that you're going to get some heat back for when we start breaking those expectations. So just realize that as counsel, when you guys heads up. You can refer to me, I'll be the bad guy. But you can't make the problem worse by saying, oh, we'll fix your, whatever your problem is. Because that's not what we're supposed to do with people, with public money. So, sorry to cut.
Okay.
I just want counsel to help us not be in between me and another person.
That's what I've been telling everybody.
Good.
Okay. First area that I want to bring this up, this is an area that is causing some problems, but it's in the buffer area. We're getting water from the government that's coming across on the private property here in Cary Beach and causing some problems on some flooding of the roads. Actually, Craig's Landing also gets a little bit of flooding. If anybody knows where Tony lives, he lives a couple of lots over here. That whole, if you look behind these properties here and look at the fire line, it looks like a river back there. Still does. I mean, we still have water out there. So we have contacted Sunny Point, talked to the public works guy over there. He's sent pictures, sent emails, and hopefully he'll be back with us and come up with some type of solution. If you hit the next one, please. This is basically the same problem, different location. This one in particular, though, we've also, we're actually at 925, it's getting water into their unit there. It's crossing across 916 out of the buffer zone. If you look up there on the left, that's part of Dennis's lot right there. He's getting water in the back, aren't you, Dennis?
So behind Ridge.
Yes, behind Ridge, yeah. But anyway, it's quite deep there, and it's actually crossing General Whiting Avenue going in there. So this is the same thing we're dealing with Sunny Point. Hopefully we'll get this taken care of. I'm not sure exactly how, if it's mounding across the back or whatever. Next one.
So Sunny started south and north if everyone
that's right. Oh, I'm sorry.
South of town, we're coming north, right?
It's just an easement. That's wooded areas back there. But it's high and it's pushing all the water out to the town.
That's flooded in those wooded areas too. So yeah. I mean it's just a bunch of
Is the first year we've ever had that.
No.
Correct.
The location, one location very near Tony's house, back on more. We've had that problem before. The house over on the south side has had it in their backyard before. She built it. We've actually gone in there years ago and helped try to help her get it out of her yard. She's out actually bulkheaded around and has kept some of the water out of that. But yeah. This is from E Avenue to H Avenue. These are the areas that we have problems with. I believe that Joseph can recognize the one down here near E Avenue. I'm sure he's well aware of the problem that we have.
Lives right in the middle of it.
Right, and front property. Some of these are vacant lots that don't have houses on them. You'll see. Up on 4th Avenue near G Avenue, up on the left, that's the real low area that we have. We've extended a couple of basins down to that area, and we've also extended a 2-inch main or a line going down in front of each one of these properties, teed off with a backflow and boxed in so that we can send them some letters saying that we need some help with y'all putting in some type of system to get it to that point so that we can get rid of it. So that's something we're working on as far as letters. We just completed that 2-inch line with the necessary work there. So we are working with that one. I talked to Joseph a little bit about that area down here towards the avenue. There may be a possibility there on 4th Avenue down in front there to shave some of that right away and be able to shave it down enough to be able to put a small pipe in a small basin and run it to some of those basins on the avenue. That may catch part of, or a small part of that low area there without pumping. But the problem, I think everybody received a letter from, I forgot the name.
Mr. Wood?
Yeah, Mr. Wood. He is actually facing on 3rd Street. Not sure what we'll do with him yet. It may take another 2-inch line where you can put a sump pump in. Yeah, right there, or we could even jump over in it.
Or that could be one of the center ones in the park. Oh, there we are.
He lives right there. I think we possibly can, with that basin right there, is deep enough, we may be able to run a basin here and a basin right there to be able to take care of that. I don't know that for sure. We could run a 2-inch line there to that basin right there to allow him to get rid of some of that. The rest of them, that's a vacant lot up here, right there.
That area.
That one right there is a vacant lot. That one right there. What's that? What were you asking?
That area there on E, third and fourth?
Yes.
Every rain event. We have problems there. Is that right?
Well, they've been having that problems right there since the beginning of time. Mr. Wood's been having problems there. But it's also added down to this area right here. So, and that's about 18 to 24, between 12 and 18 inches lower right there than it is right there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we may have some problems with that. But we're looking at solutions, is what we're doing. So our biggest problems actually is right there and right there. That lot right there is vacant. That lot right there is owned by a little couple that from the mountains, and they sandbag in front of their garage area there, keeps it out, but I'm not sure what we're going to do there yet. Next one. Anybody have any questions about those?
You got the thing.
Put your glasses on. Oh, okay. Oh. Heavy on the trigger for you. Thank you.
There we go.
Looking at my high tech. Okay, that's from H Avenue to K Avenue. Let's see if I'm going to start that right here. Right here is, they have a little bit of low area in the back of this. We're going to try and tie into that. That won't take it, so we may have to try to tie into a basin out here in front to take care of it. They're going to have to pump that because of the elevation. Let's see what else we got on there. Now, I'm sorry, this is the little country of the mountain people. That right there is off of 421. They were having work coming off of J Avenue, coming down and running on their property. They bound it up a little bit of dirt right there, took care of it themselves, and it runs down this basin now. So that one's pretty much taken care of. This one right here I didn't talk about. That's on H Avenue. We're going to, he's already put a sump pump in. We're going to take a 2-inch line run to the little basin right there, take care of that. That right there is owned by Mike Roberts. It's a low lot. We're not going to do nothing with that one yet. That's about it.
What's the big one here?
That's the one we already talked about. That's just caught. We overlapped. That's the area right there that we overlapped. We basins right there, that one and that one. We stubbed out a 2-inch line. The gentleman who lives right there pumps into that. We ran a 2-inch line down in front of these properties here, teed it off, boxed it up with back foot preventers, and to allow them to be able to pump some of this area. They were 18 to 24 inches low in the back side of some of those areas where they just about have to pump to get it there. So we've given them the opportunity to get it there, and we're going to put together a package recommendation on size of the pump, you know, and some prefab stuff that they could use with some dollar costs, just to give them an idea of what it would cost them to do this.
So that was resolved?
Well, it's not resolved. We have a way for them to get rid of the water.
Oh,
if they pump it.
The water portion is resolved.
Well, yeah. So we're going to send them, I just hadn't had a chance to get together that stuff here. We just finished that last week. The pipe, and so we'll get together these packages and send it to them, and hopefully they'll.
So Doug, Sonny's got a nice plan. So here's the package. If you go to Lowe's and buy this, build this basin in your low spot, connect it to your power supply with a float switch, and then it'll pump off.
Right.
But again, they're going to be like, well, why aren't you doing this for me? Because it's private property. So we'll get a flashback from that.
The areas that we can basin out and actually get a gravity flow off of it, we're going to do that. But the areas that are just on, you know, gravity wise, we're going to have to try to make it to where they have a place to pump it to.
Could you give me a copy of that package?
Mm-hmm. This is some of the low areas that we have right here. Is right behind the church, Lutheran Church. If you know, the last couple of big rains we had cones put up over here on one side so it wouldn't keep on splashing and running river over here. Not sure what I'm going to do with that one yet. We have some basins over here. Invert-wise, I'm not sure if we have enough fall to run something out here. We're going to have to, if it is, it's going to be a small pipe. But that happens every so often. And then right here, oh yeah, third in. We've already taken care of this one. That gentleman did a lot of work right there on this piece of property himself. He put in a sump. We ran a 2-inch line in this basin right here. And when he has some big rains, he pumps it down there. That's been doing a really good job. This is the northern section of the town. We'll start with Alabama Avenue over here. This is Pinfish. This is something new. We have a driveway and a yard that's being flooded in. No house problems, but it's a nuisance, and we're looking at a way to try to help them out. I'm not sure what we're going to do there yet. This right here is mackerel, and it's going to be as simple as tearing out some concrete and redoing the grade, so it'll run down to this basin right here. It's a pretty good fall right here, and I think by taking out one of the driveways and getting it going that way, that'll take care of that problem. We may have to pour a small section of driveway back right there and improve that swell just a little bit, but that'll take care of that. This right here is fairly, well, this right here is a lot that we have to improve some of this drainage coming down on Swordfish. That right there has been a low spot. It's got a trailer on it. And it's been a low spot right there. And it's overrunning into the back of this new, fairly new structure right here. And we have a problem with a little corner right there that I think I can take care of by doing some improvements here, which would be cleaning some ditches and maybe setting some graze on these boxes. So I think we can take care of that problem right there. Right here is, the mayor will know about this one. That's her area right there. There's some low areas. which what happened is, we used to, right, just see this right here, that's where it used to drain out of, this ditch right here. And what's happened when they built this, they closed off that drainage thing and left the low area there, and she's dealing with it, trying to deal with it with some pumping and whatever, coming out to the street there. And the little areas right here we're talking about, when we have some of these major rains, flash flood conditions, these are the areas, Jim Duden would be very familiar with that one. The last time I saw him out there, he was knee deep trying to get this water, making sure it
was mid-thigh,
keeping the drains clean and all that. And then I saw David Hedler right there. He was out there clearing out and making sure they were draining too. So when we have flash flood conditions, there's a possibility of them backing up a little bit because of the area that this drains, this all this area, it even comes in from Bluefish, Trout comes in the back way. This area right here is, what is that, curried by the sea?
Sea Lane.
Yeah.
Sea Lane Ray is curried by the sea development.
I think one side is Curie Beach Estates and one side is Curie.
Well, whatever it is, it breaks in two pieces right here, right there. This goes this way, and then there, goes out. This goes to the highway, it goes out to the big pipe out in the ocean over here, right there. And we have some backup conditions in there during flash flood sometimes, and that's a whole new. That's a whole different story about why I think it is. It's something we're going to have to get DOT involved with. They did a major drainage project and coming down all the way past, what was that? Almost South Carolina Avenue. It comes down, it's almost to. Well, on South Carolina Avenue, and it's 36-inch pipe, runs all the way down, catches a couple of the side roads, catches all the parking lots, everything there, and it runs down to the big outfall pipe that we have going out in the ocean. Problem is this area right here has a little 18-inch pipe that runs out down this way, and so we have a 36-inch with all that drainage area coming down, we have an 18-inch coming into the same basin to go out to the ocean. So
that doesn't work?
So that don't work. No, that was during the last big rain, I was standing about 2 foot of water maybe right there. So it wasn't going anywhere, which in turn backed everything up there. Of course, this was already backed up. So we had some problems in there, but that's under flash flood conditions, and the system just won't take that. Even with
plus,
the improvements that we did.
Yeah, that plus in educating our property owners and our residents to keep stuff out of the thing there as it flows in, because the first time it did it, there was a plastic bag that it floated in there and covered the whole thing and nothing would go out. And then the second time, when we had all our neighbors out there digging it out, it was because all of us had pine straw and mess in our yard,
well,
and washed into it and covered, and as soon as it got it straightened off, it started flowing.
Yeah, that doesn't help either.
And if we could, you know, educate our citizens that it's okay for them to help and keep stuff out of their drains.
But most of them are pretty good about it now. They know to go out and start cleaning.
Yeah,
you know,
we have
a lot of cleaners and children with the education.
Aaron will like that too.
And he's in charge of our work crew over there and cut our cords.
But as you can see, we do have some problem spots here and there. We are looking at them. Any other ones that you know of? I know there's probably a few more around that's got problems in the backyard or something. But these are the major ones. These are some of the complaints that I've had and some of them that we've looked at and some of the ideas we have of fixing some of them, and we've already started fixing some of them. So. That's my stormwater plan to take care of some of the problems that we're having right now.
So there's one up there, and just tell me how I should respond to it. Creek Keys and Sea Watch. that area in the back that you were so kind to help with pumping out last time.
Right.
What should the response be? That's really not a town issue back there.
Well, years ago, what we did is we went in and tapped a line coming out of the basin. I'm not sure on this.
It's not on in that.
Anyway, off of a Curie Village, this line right here, this is the property that you're talking about. Yeah. This line right here, we went and tapped in. This is the area that you're talking about.
Yes.
Right there is a basin. We tapped out of that basin because these people here were going to put some basins back there to catch that water and bring it out to us. So that basin right there, we tapped out of it and we stubbed it out at the property line, actually a little bit below the property line right there. Waiting for them to do it, they never did anything. So, like you said, last time we went to this lot right here and we put a pump in there and tried to pump out some of it to keep it moving. Permanent, you know, if we had a couple of small basins, this is enough fall, I believe, that they had some small basins in here to run it out there, that would take care of a lot.
Okay. So, did the property owners change or did they just knew the plan and then didn't execute? Or you
we didn't flood for a while.
Okay.
You know, sometimes.
So they blow our mind and we think you have a plan. We invested both money to fix it.
President, deal with their HOA president and say, look, that's the property. There was a plan.
Right.
The town has done something to give you a drainage area, but you're going to have to figure out a way to get that water.
Right. And so maybe it would be a joint deal where y'all could have to pay for a little small basis.
But thank you for that's the only one that comes up to me. So
right.
Okay.
Well, that's there you were talking about, right?
So anyone about the all the cul-de-sacs in the south end of town that have the standing water right where the road goes into 421.
Yeah, that's the Howard Hill, everything. And what we have here is we have ditches and swell system where they really don't go anywhere. The water goes and sits there and it's supposed to go down. When we have these big rains, they just don't do a real good job. But the problem that we're having now is we're also getting water from Sunny Point. That's what we had last time. I mean, their water's just coming across and flooding that area. So,
yeah, on the north side, that first lot, that second lot, that corner lot, and to the right, that one and the one next door, that's our main issue right there.
Well, if you remember right, we went and put this basin right there years ago because it was flooding in there.
Yeah.
We came and stowed that out. This gentleman right there and owns this lot and this lot right here. We went to this basin right here, stubbed out a 2-inch line, and tied it into there, and it's pumping that low area right there. A couple of the problems that we had in the past in that area is that, well, the biggest problem was that one time when we couldn't get out there to open up the basin, open up these outfalls.
So our outfall is north of the Florida River?
Yes. No, it's south. Right. It's south. It's right there. Right there.
Yeah, that was the guy that Bradford.
That's the guy that didn't see you and talk.
And yeah, he was saying that it went out north of there on Fort Fisher and out to the border.
Comes out right there. Right. It's between those two houses and those lots right there. Okay. Comes out. He's tied into either that one. I think that one right there is the one he's tied into.
Yeah, that was the one.
But it goes,
because it goes right across that other guy's property who lives in Richmond and wants to sell his lot.
Well, anyway, he's got a 2-inch line. He's got a pump that he's putting in the back door right here and runs to that basin.
So as long as the outfall is open.
As long as the outfall is open, I don't think see where he's got a.
Well, he also would like to. He would like for us to take over the pump.
No, good job.
We don't do anything on private property.
But
I do know that he's been, I mean, the homeowners association, y'all do have one, right? Y'all been hearing from him, right?
Yeah, so now he's going to ask the homeowners association to take it over.
I don't have a problem with that, but I do.
We don't want to dog and fight.
They're not going to take it over. Our problem with that area is when the outfall on the beachfront is clogged, they just had to open it up again February 4th.
Yeah.
I don't have big pictures, but the guy from Richmond was flooded again on February 4th.
Yeah, does he own the house or the lot?
He owns the house on Port Fisher.
That house.
But, yeah.
Okay.
And the Bradfords are here. This all was flooded until they went out and opened up the drain. When they opened up the drain, the water dropped.
The drain was covered just like Cutter Ford.
Well, it was clogged up, as soon as gas didn't get to it until it got.
Well, this particular time, it was February, that was on the weekend, is that right?
It should be, because it's not the drain on the beach, it's the drain on the fish.
Is that your birthday?
No, that was a Thursday.
Right, this way just on.
Yes, you did a great job.
But normally, we try to get out and open them up before we do that big rain event.
Yeah, they opened it up, as soon as they opened it up, it all went.
Yeah. Well, in that particular area, what we're going to try to do is rework that overflow. Right now, it's so far back into the dune system that I'm afraid if I open it up, it's just going to wash the complete dune system out in front of this house. So we need to rework it, but I don't think we can do it until we get some renourishment or something, because we stick it out there, then the wave wash is going to get it. So we're going to work on that, and that's not the only place. There's a couple of them that we need to rework on that too.
Yeah, and most of us have been here through a lot of hurricanes and saw when high tide was up to Port Fisher Boulevard.
Well, especially that
one. Don't want anything to take away our dune system.
Right.
Or will we end up with a beach in New Jersey?
Yeah.
Well, I think you did a great job putting it together. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I just wish they were all fixed.
Mm-hmm.
But timeline.
Being able to see it helps.
But let council know timeline. There's some of these that we're going to be able to get to fairly quickly. We're going to contact the property owners and let them know pretty much what we can do and what we can't do or whatever. I'm sure there will be some call. You know, I'm going to tell them to call later. And then some of them's going to take a little more time than others. So it's not going to be an overnight thing, but I'm hoping it's not going to take much more than a year to get most of these completed and done. So it'll leave some of these people, some of these problems. So.
Well, get the towns part done.
Yeah.
Many of the nice stuff they're going to have to do, and if they do it, it'll be fixed, like the one that Craig brought up. Or we hope it'll be fixed. We'll at least move it better. If they don't do it, won't be fixed. And if they have the pump unplugged when the flood comes, or the pump doesn't work because they didn't do any maintenance on it. So this doesn't just go away. And I think just for the council, right, you know, we got to make sure we manage the message. But Public Works is working hard to make sure they identify the issues and come up with a solution, not just say it's your problem. I think somebody's going to get a job with that.
Okay, real quick, this is the rehab work that this is phase two that we've been talking about for a few years, trying to complete. And I call this phase two plus, because there's a lot of areas that we're talking about completing, doing that we did not add in phase two. Phase two basically took care of this area right here, which is behind all that property right there. And what we're talking about doing is making all, repairing all this right here. All these lines right here the pipes are the desperate repair. What we're looking at is the possibility of lining all these. So we're looking at a price tag right now. Worst case scenario is what we're looking at, fiberglass lining is about $650,000.
Are these old lines or something?
These are old lines that were put in about 30 years ago. They were treated lines when they put them in, and they're old metal pipes, and the bottom half of them are just about gone. So we're having to be real careful about them cleaning them, number one. I think there's going to be less than that number. I'm hoping to keep it down to about $500,000. But I think it's well worth the extra money to do the lining than to try to tear out and repair some of this. This is this will be getting into a lot of backyards right here. Of course, this is tearing up the roads. This is going through the backyards and through all these easements and everything. But I'll keep everybody informed on
is that what you want to start on this spring?
This is, yes, ma'am. This is the project. Right now, they should be out there now doing some cleaning and some video and starting that work today. And once they do that, we'll know a little bit more about it. So, what we can do.
So, do you got anything going behind something? The back side right there?
Yeah, that's the area right there.
Was that
yeah. Sorry. Yeah, that's behind your house,
right? Right.
And that's what we're talking about lining. Instead of going out there and tearing all that up and trying to replace it, which I think would be a much better option.
Have you got a liner in there? One of your guys have to call in.
Yeah, we did. We had to hire one of the small guys to do it. they pull it through, and there's different options of heating it with water or with air or whatever, but they put it in and it just expands up and it covers the fiberglass, or if they use concrete, they can use concrete, they can spray concrete, they can do a lot of different ways.
It's like a stem.
But they have a fiber.
That it's like a stem.
That's right, that's exactly what it is. So that's what they would do. That's all I have.
Anybody else? Okay, could we take a 5-minute break, please?
Of our roster will retire. We have quite a few guys that have, I would say quite a few, but we have some that have over 30 years experience, and 20% of the entire roster will retire within the next 5 years. It might be 4 years, it could be 2 years, it could be 6 years, somewhere around 5 years is when we'll lose 20% of our roster. 63% of our overall roster has less than 10 years experience. About half has less than 5 years experience. 74% of the call volume is covered by firefighters with 1 to 5 years of experience in the fire service. 60%, roughly 60%, is covered by firefighters with less than 2.5 years of service in the fire service. You can see the graph there. Basically, the majority of the workload is performed by guys with 1 to 5 years of fire experience and guys that are in the retirement zone, that 20% that I talked about before. I'll touch a little bit more on why the guys with 5 to 20 years, their numbers are lower. It all makes sense. But of those responding to the majority of the call volume, 74% that is, only 30% are certified at Firefighter 1 level. The Firefighter 1 level is a state certification that basically determines who can go inside of a burning building. Of those responding to the majority of the call volume, only 38% are certified at the EMT level. At the same time, when we respond to medical calls, we have state protocols that we have to abide by as well. Basically, which drugs can we push? Who can we, as far as refusals, what sort of care can those guys give based on their certification level? All right, so what does this mean? In short, the majority of the workload is covered by guys with very little experience and the guys that are in retirement zone. So, you know, as far as when those guys do retire, that 20%, our roster is going to take a hit there. Furthermore, like I said, the majority of the workload now is covered by guys that are, they're young. And it's, it's understandable. You have those guys that are, they're young guys that they're not in careers yet. They don't have families, so they have the time to do it. So all that makes sense. I've got a little topic here. Why are so few of the firefighters trained at the fire service standard level? It's really a time constraint type of deal. We've got guys that have 15, 20 years, and they still don't have their Firefighter 1 certification. It does take a while. If you have a family, you have a few kids, and you have to take them to basketball practice, baseball practice, that sort of thing. There's a time constraint concern there. Also, in the past, the county used to hold classes all the time, all over the county. They still do, but it's nowhere near as much as they did after they disbanded the volunteers. So, before it was a county-wide deal, now it's kind of a fend for yourself type of deal. So the county itself does offer a few college seminars. That's twice a year. Local volunteer fire departments in Burgaw, Pender, those sorts of fire departments, they still offer classes. But if you work a full-time job and the class is from 6 to 10 on a Tuesday, and you have to pick up your kid or whatever your circumstance may be, driving out to Burgaw to get a class may not be feasible for them.
One other thing is the individual classes can go anywhere from 3 weeks to 8 weeks, and you have to attend the vast majority of the classes or you don't get credit for anything.
Right. Yeah, so there's the time requirement. How long do you have to be there, but you have to make, 90% of the class time? So, if you miss one Monday out of a six-week class, once a week, then you won't get credit for the certification. So you won't even be allowed to test. Other related issues, we've had a turnover issue. I really don't see it as that much of a concern because we've had a pretty good recruiting program going. We've been able to replace the guys that we've lost. The only issue is that you're replacing guys that you've trained over the past few years with guys that are green, they're fresh, they have absolutely no experience. So as far as actually getting bodies to the fire departments, it's really not an issue. But getting guys that are trained and certified to meet state requirements and different fire service levels, it's becoming harder and harder. The state is increasing their requirements. Jim knows he's a fire instructor for the state. They introduced 3 new classes this year. So they went from 21 classes to 24 classes. As far as total hours, Jim, what is it, 268 hours total that the volunteer has to have to get a state certification? And like I said previously, we have guys that you know, they have 15 years of service and they still don't quite have their certification. So like I stated, the turnover issue is not really an issue because we can get new guys. The problem is we're losing those trained guys. We are paying them $30 a night now. That's what they receive if they stay the night for 12 hours and run calls. We're losing those guys to $30,000 jobs, $50,000 jobs for New Hanover County Hospital, which is completely understandable. Other related issues at Arlen, you know, he may have a little more in-depth answers for you if you want to go that route. You know, the IRS, Department of Labor, Fair Labor Standards Acts, we've kind of danced around those issues for quite a while. It's, you know, according to the IRS, a volunteer cannot perform 20%, more than 20% of what is required of a full-time guy. Furthermore, you know, you got workers' compensation. Well, if a guy goes over that 20% mark, then he's classified as a part-time guy. So if he moves to a part-time slot, then we have to tell those guys, okay, according to workers' compensation, you're no longer going to receive $500 a week, you'll get $30 a week. So we give more time. I'm not, as far as the exact amounts, I can probably answer that for you. But they all sort of conflict with one another, and it just makes it harder for the guys like Harold and myself to recruit volunteers and keep volunteers. And, I mean, if you have anything you'd like to add on the IRS or the Arlen Department of Labor, Fair Labor Standards Act.
Yeah, I think you've covered it. And you also run into issues that you can't be an employee and also be a part-time volunteer or whatever. So you run into those kind of issues also.
So, Arlen or Nancy, because maybe it's an HR issue, just so I understand, explain to me why workers' comp does not cover part-time.
They do cover, but then it's based on your part-time compensation versus
so
if you're classified as a volunteer firefighter, you receive basically the maximum amount as a volunteer. But as soon as you shift to part-time.
I got you. Okay. And that's the same issue you're going to have. So they don't even factor in that you have a second job that you may not be covered by.
That's not government,
that's the
insurance.
Yeah, that's the insurance company. But I mean, the bad part about it is, so they're pushing people into part-time for all these other reasons, and then I wonder how many really love it. Thanks. It's good learning for me. Thank you.
Well, it's also Fair Labor Standards. You can't have an employee that's paid to do one job and also volunteer for the same job, because then you're skirting the overtime.
Yeah.
Which is what's hurting the fire department
a
lot.
Yeah.
So if we get a paid fireman that takes a call that he gets over his paycheck on the night he's not working, they're paid.
Well, for the
full-time
guys.
They need to be paid.
Yeah, okay. So we should just pay
them
hourly rate, I guess, if they come into a call off their own shift. That's what everybody else does. Do we not do that now? Yeah, or comp time. Yeah, okay. Okay, thanks. Oh, that one we're doing right, I assume, right? I mean, yeah. Because Dennis has got full-time guys that might come in. Like, when we had the shooting, there were a lot more guys than he had at home. Because I was down there. So, I mean, that happens. And Sonny's got guys that... The big flood happens and these guys come in, so I assume we're doing that.
My guys come in all the time. I mean, they're paid.
They're compensated.
Yeah,
overtime.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
Okay. So,
we were told years ago to get rid of,
right.
Thank God.
That's right.
Of the comp time.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so those were the other related issues that are kind of, they're not really well known. In the fire service, they certainly are, but as far as, you know, outsiders looking in, you know, there are issues that we are constantly thinking about. When I turn in the payroll, we had a volunteer cover vacation and sick time. I turn it into Arlen, who knows that this guy is a volunteer, but, you know, he's exceeding his volunteer status and moving towards part-time. But at the same time, we have a live-in program. We cannot have a part-timer there. So they have to be a volunteer guy. So if they're not in the volunteer status, then they cannot live in the house. Furthermore, they get taxed, they'll get taxed at the end of the year on that live-in house as well. So we've got volunteers at the live-in house that, they get a tax hit at the end of the year, which, they get a free house to stay at the beach. So, that's the cost of that. But those are just issues that I wanted to bring to light that Arlen and I discussed, and Chief, and, we discussed it quite a bit. How did we get here? Like I discussed last time, the fire service as a whole is changing. Volunteerism is changing. We used to, the fire service used to be guys in the town that would, they wanted to protect their town. So, the guys that were willing were the firefighters. Nowadays, it's really turned to two really distinct types of people. One is the young guys who are in between schooling, or they're in school and they have the time to give, or they want to pursue a career in public service. Or we have the stable 30 to 50 year old guy that has a little extra time. His kids are going to school, and he's got the time to give. It's what we do is we try to recruit all ages so that way we can cover those different risks. A good example, I could use Chief Cooper for an example. For recruiting, he could put an ad out there to get volunteer police officers. He could put the ad and say, we'll supply your gun, we'll give you a car, and he'd probably have 50 people want to be a volunteer police officer. Maybe not. So he gets the volunteer police officers. Well, they come in and he supplements his staff with the volunteer guys. Well, the issue is not the recruiting part, it's having those guys out there in the field that are untrained, they're uncertified, so you've got the liability issues of it. And at the same time, he's got to follow IRS standards, FLSA standards, that sort of stuff. The police service, they've moved away from volunteer police officers as well. The fire service as a whole is moving towards paid departments. Jim, you work for Toledo Fire Department, you guys are all paid, right? That's where the fire service as a whole is moving. Harold and myself, we've taken the task of making sure we keep volunteers, implement different programs, try to supplement the paid guys as well as we can with the volunteers and part-timers. It's just kind of come to a point right now where we're constantly turning the cycle of getting guys, losing guys, getting guys, losing guys. And the guys that we're getting are untrained, so we're expecting a huge responsibility of our firefighters that are uncertified and they're untrained. And right now, the way that we're covering that is, myself, for instance, I'm covering some night shifts. We had 7 guys leave this year. We have other full-timers covering night shifts. We've patched the problem pretty well. Where it's going to be in the future, like we discussed last time with the 20-year projection, I think that it's going to continue to decline. Volunteers are going to continue to decline. John Batson knows, as well as Carolina Beach, they're on the downswing as far as volunteerism. It's just the way that the fire service is moving. So these are things that we have to think about. Do we want untrained volunteers being the same guys that are performing CPR and putting out house fires, if we also know at the same time that a volunteer is really a part-timer, or the part-timer is really a volunteer, and that sort of thing. So I put on there, what have other departments done to fix these issues? Carolina Beach has gone from 1 full-timer with 40 volunteers. They've got 8 full-timers now with the chief. They supplement their full-time staff they have a live-in program as well. They've got part-timers and they have volunteers. Their volunteers are required to do 2 night shifts a month. So the guys that are, they get their drill pay, I think it's $30, $25 a night, John. So they get their $25 they're required to do their 2 nights. Rice and Beach, they've gone from 3 full-timers to 13 full-timers. They've got interns, live-ins, part-timers, and 25 volunteers. Their call volume's right around the same as ours. Their population's right around the same as well. Of course, course, we know that the revenue is quite a bit higher, but this is about a need, not a financial reasoning. It's just simply stating where volunteerism is going and where we're at right now. So what can we do to fix this issue? Well, the easiest answer, I spoke with David Hengler, the easiest answer is just to cave in and hire full-time guys, but that's not something that I want to do, certainly not something that Chief Hengler has ever wanted to do. He's done a really good job of keeping volunteers and keeping costs down low. Like I said, I like to do the same as well. But that is the easiest answer. Just like the police department, they have a full-time staff. They don't have volunteers. It works around all those other issues. The easiest answer is to hire 12 full-time guys, or have 12 full-time guys. Now, one day in the future, it's going to come to that, and I see that being the max as far as what, at this point, of what the town of Curry Beach needs. It follows all of the guidelines. It corrects all those IRS, Department of Labor, FSLA standards, that sort of stuff. But at a minimum right now, we feel that four full-time firefighters would correct the issues. We could still supplement it with the live-in program if needed.
Is that additional full-time or total full-time?
Additional. We currently have four plus the chief right now. By doing that, we'd be able to go to 24-hour shifts. That would put two firefighters on 24/7 that have all of their certifications. They have their North Carolina State certification and their medical certifications. Like I said, right now, the nighttime is on risk. Currently, during the day, we have full-time staff, but at night it's covered by live-in program students. So we may have two guys that are 19 years old with neither of them having a firefighter 1 certification working between 7 p.m. and 7 a.m.
Which means if you're going to have, we're going to have to get out here quick, I guess.
Right, and that's how we supplement. Harold, he lives right down the road. I live over the bridge away, so I'm a ways away. And, the volunteers, they respond as well. But, the volunteer turnout, as far as the guys that live in Curry Beach, like I discussed last time, that number has decreased drastically. They're just not responding to calls like they used to. Like I said, that's due to time constraints, family, all that sort of stuff.
Cost of living,
right, yeah.
The training can hear also. The cost, when you talk about, salary cost and benefits, does that include training and equipment?
You hire and train.
Okay. Well, I just assume you have to go through additional training. Why?
Well, yeah, we are paying for it, but it doesn't come out of the fire department.
Okay. Right.
Shut it down.
And equipment. Do they have to buy their own jackets?
No, their uniform costs, they're low. They're $150 a year per person.
Unless you have some left over for volunteers. The 35 firefighters, are they the same group that does the EMT, or is that separate?
So that's our total. That's our total roster. You're talking about 35 on the roster.
The 35 on the roster. So they do the firefighter and the EMT.
Are you having firefighter EMT?
Yeah, we have. I believe it's 9 EMT visits.
Okay, 9
of
the
35. All of our full-time staff is EMT. Because,
okay. I mean, you guys, your response time under 3 minutes is unbelievable. I mean, I know we're a small town, but still, it's unbelievable that you guys are so quick to get to people need assistance.
Well, that's good.
And I know it's hard to build for the fire department, right? But everybody needs to plan for what about that next big fire.
Oh, yeah.
Not the last fire.
The main point that I wanted to touch is that firefighters aren't just going to fires now. They do everything. Like I say, if someone calls 911, then they dispatch to the fire department. They don't know who to dispatch. So we've got a lot of guys that they respond to a lot of stuff that they for instance, a pelican with fishing wire wrapped around his legs 200 yards off the beach. If you have a young guy there, does he know to go out there and get the bird or to not get the bird? So, you know, that's the sort of issues. Same with, you know, it relates to Sonny as well. If we have a water pipe break in the middle of the night, we've got a 19-year-old guy, he's the officer on duty, and Harold's out of town, and I'm out of town, and a pipe breaks, does he know to call Sonny? And sometimes it hasn't happened in the past, so that creates more workload for Sonny as well.
Only do it one time. I only go one time to let me up my
car. But the fire service as a whole is moving towards a professional service, just like the police department is. You know, I hope the volunteers stick around for 50 to 100 years. I really do, but realistically, it's not going to happen. And I really don't think it's going to happen. And, you know, volunteer requirements would be so ridiculous that nobody wants to be a volunteer.
I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I think that the requirements, what, 8 volunteers in one full time or something like that?
4 to 1.
4 to 1. So it's 4 to 1, and you have to train them all 4. And I mean, it just seems like there's a lot of regulation.
And this is a nationwide.
No, I know that.
Yeah,
I know that.
I can remember, you know, when a volunteer fire department was made up of not just volunteers, but they had auxiliary, they had junior firemen, they had the whole family involved. And if we got away from that, it
was still have auxiliaries.
No.
We have gone for 10 years.
Seems like such a shame because then the whole community was involved and it was easy. I guess that's when it was easier to get volunteers. If the whole family got involved, really. I'm sorry we don't do that anymore. It shows how old I am. Okay. Any questions?
Does anyone have any questions over there?
So how many are you asking for this year? Okay, and you want to explain the grant program? Are
well,
you applying or considering
it? On Homeland Security, but it would not do us any good at this time because they just opened it up to write it. They will not award it until after November or December of this coming year, or this year. And if you've already hired people, then you can't retroact. So we're trying to figure out plug a hole that's leaving now. And we beat it about every way we can and can't find any way around it. We've lost, like I said, 7 people this year in the short past.
So you're really running a training academy you're running a training academy to keep the volunteers coming. Basically.
And how many are you maxed out as far as your full timers, all those positions are filled or are any of them vacant right now?
No, they are filled. Well, the problem is it's night shift. We don't have anybody to cover night shift. And if we get 4 full time, we go to a 24-hour shift, which is called the ABC shift. And we work 24, we're all 24. And you work there, work 3 24s, and you're off 4 days. And you start back. Do 1 more, off 1, off 1, off 1, off 4, and off 4. Same thing on the supply. Like to do. Can I read on ABC shift?
Fire is just like police. At nighttime, when you don't have any supervisors or anything, and something goes wrong, you're a long time, or at least a longer time, before the supervisor gets there.
supposed to have lunch ready?
Yeah.
Can we eat through lunch, or it was a hot lunch, so
it's a hot lunch.
I can put it in the oven.
I mean,
mine,
so we can do this
long
day.
I'm going to make
it. I'm sorry, everyone else is sorry.
I started meeting with department heads last month, before the council meeting, and both of our last meetings, especially the one in January, we started about facility needs, and from a personal standpoint, when they were standing, when did this first start? 10 years ago? 12 years ago?
Probably 12, 13 years
ago. Okay, 12, 13 years ago, about having more space. And it goes on and on and on, year after year after year. And last year, we put $30,000 into Nancy's budget to have somebody rework the plan. And then we took it out, and it was put back on the shelf. And my proposal is we either go on and pursue it and do it and put money toward it and time and effort, or we just kill it and say, that's it, because just nagging at it year after year after year is not working. So, we talked about this, and there were some temporary fixes, like working in the attic, and which means taking the climate control and be sure that it's load-bearing and all up there, and that would be extremely expensive. And we also talked about, or at least Dennis proposed, and I think Ed was there when we talked about a temporary fix out there where the bicycles were to put some storage area in. And I think I kind of pushed on that until everybody got together, apparently in the last couple of weeks or week, and talked about it. Together with Nancy, and Nancy might be able, or Dennis, describe some of this. And they looked at the layout, gave some suggestions, and of course none of us are architects. We could probably have somebody to tweak it and come up with some additional ideas. But I think if you have this in front of you, you can pretty well see that not only does it help the majority of our departments, but one of the issues we ran into, of course, was Sunny for everybody. And the space that he really needs over the coming years, the town does not have. I mean, even with the three lots over there, the town does not have the space that he needs, unless, of course, we build on Sandman.
Very good.
Okay. But in looking at this and being able to free up a couple of the slots over here where the fire department is and have some area for him to have as a lay down yard, hopefully would help him a little bit, at least at the beginning. And the only, I guess, one thing, and maybe Harold or Ed can explain this, the one problem I would have is most of your bays are over here where we've always talked about in the corral, but you have one over here too. And having them separated like that, I'm not sure what you talked about putting over here, unless that's for storage.
Let me just go ahead and go through it real quick.
Yes, can we try to give you our reason?
Thank you.
Let me just go ahead and go through it real quick.
Okay, thank you, John. Thank you.
So, if you look at the map there, I drew that fire department in there. I realize that's not the correct size.
Okay.
I realize you're probably going to want to go bigger. It could be two stories, or part of it could be two stories, whatever the case may be. We just needed to see something on paper for us to go off of. That's what this amounts to. So when the department heads met, we all talked about our needs and what we could get by with, what we thought we needed over the next 20 years, or however the case may be. And this is pretty much what we all agreed on would be the simplest and most effective way to do it on main town complex property and kind of keep everybody on the same piece of property. So, right here would be the most significant change to the town hall property. You'll see that as the edge of the fire department right there.
Police department, excuse me.
This place right here, this is all of our parking. It goes all the way to the corner of the building, which fronts the town hall parking lot and ties back into what is now my office. This space right here alone is 2,744 square feet. It would accomplish a couple of things. First of all, we would possibly have a storage bay for our Nancy's golf cart, other outdoor activities, space that we don't currently have. This area right here, this could be used as our new council room area, office rooms, conference rooms, etc. This area right here, that would be the new building department, is what I would like to see happen. My current office, this would turn into additional office space that Nancy has been requesting for some time. Over here is the current council chambers. You could leave that exactly as it is, or turn that into office space, whatever the case may be. If you go to the parking lot, while we were talking about this, I said, well, maybe we should look at redesigning our parking area and the new traffic flow pattern. This is just something I drew on here. I'm not advocating for this. Just thought I'd throw it out there just to see what's possible. This is all to scale, according to this map. It is all to scale. These are 9x20 parking spaces all the way across. So what you would see now, if you'll notice that red line, that is the existing entrance into our parking area. We completely closed that off. We moved an entrance over here to the south part of the parking lot. We drive through, park diagonally, and exit from the north side of the parking lot. This parking area, combined with what I drew up here with the fire department, looked like we were gaining around 6 additional parking spaces. That is strong. Once again, that change, I might be completely wrong. Who knows? If you go here to the existing fire department, so, one of the fire department needs some room. I don't think anybody can argue that. And using our space that we have and the structures that we have, it looked like only the best possible thing that could happen is for the fire department to have a brand new building. That serves a couple of purposes. It gives them the room that they need, and it also frees up a lot of room that other departments could use. Effectively. So if you look at the old fire department here, that bay width is it's 80 feet of bays that are composed of 5 different garage doors, 5 different bays that are 40 feet deep. Every one of those can be repurposed for individual departments. Public Works is experiencing some storage needs, indoor storage needs. 2 40 by 20 bays would be assigned to them. Fire department, although their new building can be built to whatever size y'all want, they could have 2 additional bays here that would serve as lifeguard stores for ATVs and service requirements for the trucks, things of that nature. Police department's also experiencing a large need for an indoor storage facility for crime-related issues. And then the current office space and kitchen area and bathroom of the fire department could be repurposed for the police department with training rooms, conference rooms, police offices, etc. Over here, you can see the red line there. We've drawn in a 14 by 44 foot storage facility to be used for evidence room. Well, Oric expressed an interest in having a section cordoned off where a lay down yard. We feel like that would be a good location there.
John, that doesn't go into the buffer zone, does it?
It does not.
Stops right there with that. Where it's paved right behind the bays, that's our section, right?
Behind the bays?
Yeah, there's one.
West of the bay.
Yeah.
What about them?
That paved section, and then it's gravel, that is our property line, right? So this doesn't extend into that.
It goes into our property line. I don't know where the asphalt goes.
Asphalt is a property, basically.
The original asphalt.
Yeah, we had added on by asking.
That's the easement, the sewer line comes through here, and it's a water line.
Okay.
Moving into the corral area there, that would be a great location for a new fire department. I just drew something in there. I put in our town setbacks, which would be 20 off of K Avenue and 10 off of 7th Avenue. And I drew it large enough to put some parking spaces along the side there. And then also, this would be the entrance into the base. So right in this area would be the driveway. So the fire trucks would exit and enter off of 7th Avenue. And these would be the bay depths. I really know to go over. We need to look at something on paper. Here we go.
But there'd still be plenty of room to expand the fire department out square footage wise and still have enough radius, turning radius to do what you need over there off of the existing road in the area that you have to turn.
Is there a reason you didn't turn the building around?
I threw this option out. I mean, I thought about putting a couple of different changeable copies on here just to show you other. Bottom line, you can see what is possible in this circumstance.
I think you guys said
the building could be totally turned around to face K Avenue, it could be turned to face 7th Avenue, I mean, whatever right. Y'all want, or the fire department advocates for, I mean.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it would be best for all concerned.
I guess, you know, my question is, are you prepared to move forward with this and ask Harlan to find the best ways to fund it, whether it's a bank loan or UDA loans or any other type of mechanism he can come up with or think of? Can we pursue this as a goal for the coming year?
Well, I think you will ask us.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
okay.
What I'm asking.
Well, do we want to talk numbers?
That's the first step.
I know I'm looking at Marlon, but I'm asking you guys.
The first step is for council to take a look and see if they even are interested in pursuing this. If that's the case, then we need to hire someone to do some workup drawings or whatever so that they can give us some pricing
right.
So we'll know what kind of money we're talking about, Marlon, to look at.
Well, I think Marlon wants to know that, you know, it's going to be fairly pricey and what are some options we would have this coming year, but you're absolutely right. We need someone to take this and create something that all of us can live with.
Well, this isn't just for a new fire station. Our own department heads happy with the space that this gives each individual department.
Well, we kind of figured we'd have a better shot at getting that started than spending $4 million on the public sector building, so yes, the answer is yes.
And do you think, as far as what you know, you never really know, but how long do you think this will be? Because the last building was built, what, in the late
91.
91, right? So that's 25 years it's made it. If I did the math right. Yeah, 24 years, 25 years. So will this get us 25 more years, right? Or 20 years or 15 years? That's sort of the question to the department heads, right? From what you know right now, if the council does this, will this get us into the 25 years from now?
Well, Ocean Dune and the village and all that coming there on this expansion that we're in now, that we're at. We can't expand like this again. We don't
right.
have the money.
Right.
80 by 80 fire station is going to take care of the fire needs at Jerry Beach for 30, 40 years or better, unless somebody invents something. different from this way of...
Like this talking the other day, if Sunny Point for some reason closes down and opens up the area or whatever,
right.
We have no...
Right, exactly, right. I agree. Yeah, we don't... But with what we know, that's not a choice we'll ask. What you guys know, will this do the next 25 years? Because if it would, I wouldn't advocate doing it, right?
Right.
Because we're going to, we're going to put citizens in a pretty big debt position one way. How are we getting the money? The citizens are going to be paying it back. And so if it'll do 25 years, then that's good.
Oh, so that'd be the probability.
Right.
Reality, how much bigger are we actually going to get?
Sunny's the only one that I'm still concerned about.
I'm not saying that that's going to do all the storage all I ever need. I'm not going to say that.
But if we can find a place for the lifeguards and the new fire station, that gives Sunny more options.
Well, I got all that land over Sandman that I can use.
Across the street.
Park.
And next door.
Park lay down area.
I think you guys did a pretty good job on this, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really good.
I think it's a pretty effective use of what we already have, repurposing it. One new building against two stories, or is that at least in the front, maybe you guys might want to go two stories, or in the administrative area.
Well, the other thing is, if we do something like this, this won't be the first public building in Cary Beach not built by
the citizens.
The town population.
And frankly, actually, that was why I was wondering if you turned it around and maybe you put the front of the building this way. It gives you, you can expand to the rear of the building then without ever worrying about the truck circumference.
But they'll figure that stuff out.
I don't, from my perspective, I think we're going to have to tell people what that costs and then talk to the people.
So I think the council should direct Nancy to use the money that's already in the budget to turn this into real drawings that you can get real prices.
There is no money.
Contingency, it has to come from contingency. It was taken out.
We took it out last year.
I guess we got to put it back in.
Well, I have heard from the previous administration that there was something in the works for a fire building. Was that smoke and mirrors?
They met with USDA about their grant program, and Arlen, will be able to explain this, all of this as we go along, your loan is longer, which means you could end up paying more for it with the bank.
Estimate was under $2 million. I mean, your average fire station that's being built today is 800,000 or 1.2, depending upon
type of construction.
Type of construction, steel building, retrofitting everything else. And I really like the parking. We have terrible parking in front of Town Hall right now. To look at doing that too. And closing in that whole section of the employee entrance right now gives us a lot of space. It certainly meets anything admin and finance needs for record storage. John's already got a fireproof vault in his area that I've been coveting for quite some time, as he'll tell you. It gives John more room to grow and the police chief too. We couldn't figure out any other way. We weren't sure that there was enough room for a public safety building in the corral. Is that correct? When we really started looking at that.
I'm with you, David. Let's spend some money, get drawings, figure out the road cost, add that to the staffing, and figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
So do you want to do it?
Oh, this is why I brought it up. I told you it's either go big or go home.
Is that something we want started in the current year we're in right now, or plan for the?
I think we should. We should put enough money to get formal plans that all the department heads can agree on and get formal pricing.
But the
and this year,
so
it's going to take the engineer. I don't know if he'll have enough details for you to put in next year's budget to have to do. Because I would think that from out of town close, we wouldn't want to start building until like next January.
So it's probably going to take an architect 3 months to start it out. That's before the engineering gets a hold of it.
And I would suggest even putting it into our regular budget. I would say we set up a whole separate capital project, because whether that extends beyond one fiscal year.
Yeah, that's right.
Can that become part of the mortgage arrangement? If you get there, could that become part of the mortgage arrangement?
The architecture cost. We would just have to do a resolution about reimbursement of previous costs. So we can address that.
Would we need to move I don't know how much architectural plans?
I would do it from contingency.
For this year's budget.
It also does mean that each of the department has to be looking at the details within their department on the lines, right?
How many years would you figure from today to completion?
Year and a half.
We'd like to see it done by the end of next budget year.
Because you're going to have to bid it out and do all the stuff
there. That means you want John and I to run it like we did the park?
Yes. Well, I guess we want the funds committed in the next budget year.
And one of the reasons I was asking that was because as a stopgap measure, would it be worthwhile talking about the structure that the two chiefs were talking about in the
public safety?
The temporary storage structure.
Even if it's a metal shed or something.
I don't think you need to do that.
Personally,
I think that, what are you going to do, put it there and tear it down?
Yes.
That's how we normally do it.
We'll give it to Public Works.
Awesome.
You can leave it there and I'll use it.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah, we would need to have it there a year before it has to be torn down.
You're going to spend $80,000, $70,000 or $80,000 on that problem.
More than that.
$750.
Chief Cooper? It's your building. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's no sense in putting it there for them. I agree with something on that.
Right, if you're going to do something, I think you'd add on at the end, like the fire department did, where this year you could do that as a separate part of it. Because you could make that happen and get the space that the fire.
That would be really nice if we could add that as quick as possible.
Right.
We've already got a plan for it.
We did.
Yes, I think before you build a different building, you do that add-on right there, because that doesn't change any of the other stuff. While we're getting the engineer to do all the everything else. Yeah, you can do the parking too.
See what happens in the engineers.
Hey, Nancy, can you send a request out for qualifications?
need a vote from council. Are you okay with them doing it here?
Do you like your motion?
To authorize $30,000 from the contingency fund.
We move $30,000 from the contingency fund.
And RFQ for architect.
So Kelly, what to say? I said what you said.
We direct the town
RFQ for architect.
Do an RFQ and.
Request for qualification or request for proposal?
Well, I said RFP and you correct.
We have to do RFQ, but we're going to need to do the exception thing again. Can we do, I forget how we did it with the park. I don't know if we can still get the exception. It's state, what's it, Davis Bacon?
Are you talking about the architect?
For the architect. Yeah.
Well, if it's less than a certain amount, you can do it wrong. Sure.
I don't think so for architects.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Construction, we have to do RFP, but I'll find out about that.
The question is the town clerk to do it properly.
Now you're really asking a lot. Do
and we have a second here. All those in favor?
How do you spell properly?
Opposed? Yes.
David, and I apologize. None of this was going to happen 45 years ago. I would ask for 2 acres instead of one.
Do you want to eat?
Yeah,
you can eat. So, for everyone, I'm sorry I'm leaving. I'm available. But I appreciate all the hard work that everyone did. And I'll read all the stuff you guys get to the rest of the council.
As they say, it should be as quick as possible.